March of Time. On a thousand fronts, the history of the world moves swiftly forward. A thousand new facts, new details in the world's history come into being every hour. To bring you the full, rounded story of the world's news each week, the editors of Time, starting tonight, will prepare and present the March of Time 5 nights a week, Monday through Friday. This new daily March of Time has been made possible by a sponsorship arrangement unique in radio history. The March of Time will be sponsored on alternate nights throughout this series by Remington Rand Incorporated, manufacturers of typewriters and office equipment, and Time Incorporated, publishers of Time, the weekly news magazine, and producers of the March of Time on the screen. The editors of Time tonight raise the curtain on the first of this new series, the reenactment of memorable events from the news of the world, from the March of Time. Rome, Italy. As daily news dispatches from London, Paris, Geneva, Addis Ababa give less and less hope for a peaceful solution of the Italo-Ethiopian crisis, today comes the word-for-word report of an interview between a representative of the London Daily Mail and the defiant author of the crisis, Benito Mussolini.
What will your course be, Premier Mussolini, if the League of Nations on September 4th approves international action against Italy?
If the League of Nations votes against my course in Ethiopia, Italy will leave the League that very hour. Let there be no possibility of misunderstanding.
And that will mean, of course,
war. It would not be my choice, but the League of Nations. Whoever applies sanctions against Italy will meet the armed hostility of my people. If the League is so reckless, so hot-headed, as to turn my colonial campaign into a European war, that crime will rest upon the League's head, not mine.
But Your Excellency is hopeful, no doubt, that the League's Council will appreciate Italy's attitude.
Italy has given many proofs of a desire for peace. No nation can accuse her of desiring warfare. Italy is laboring for peace as earnestly as France or England.
Even while Mussolini is speaking, almost as a reply to his words, go a wireless order from Great Britain's Admiralty.
Battleships Revenge and Valiant, 1st and 3rd Cruiser Squadrons, will proceed to Alexandria, Egypt. Cruisers Arethusa, Delhi, and Durban will proceed to Haifa. Battleship Resolution and Cruiser Dispatch will proceed to the Suez Canal entrance at Port Said. Aircraft carrier Glorious will proceed to Malta with 3 airplane squadrons. All to be ready for action September 2nd.
Our cause in Ethiopia is a just one. In a few days, it will be laid before the League's Council. It will be laid before the whole world. Proof that the Ethiopians are a barbaric people sunk in the practice of slavery.
There is no chance, Your Excellency, of an alternative?
Italy has considered and spoken. Before any other nation talks of penalties against Italy, let it think well upon the consequence of such folly.
As Britain's Mediterranean fleet prepares to close in around the Suez Canal, key point in Mussolini's route to Ethiopia, Il Duce flies to northern Italy, where 180,000 Italian troops massed in the Alps are conducting a gigantic mimic war, ostensibly as training for the mountains of Ethiopia. But Europe sees in this mock war a demonstration of Il Duce's declared intention to have troops ready to fight in Europe in the north as well as Ethiopia in the south, if Europe or the League join forces against him. Time marches on. Vienna. Today, once again, appears unobtrusively in the news the humble name of a man who knew the only true answer to a question which has perplexed historians for nearly half a century. Let us turn time back to January of 1889. It is early morning in the Imperial Hunting Lodge at Meierling, Austria. Lieutenant Lorenz Leibert, standing on guard in the apartments of his royal master, salutes a nobleman.
Leibert, is Prince Rudolf awake yet?
No, my Lord Coburg, not yet.
That's strange. He swore he would go hunting this morning.
Well, I think that perhaps something has happened to change his mind, my lord.
Something happened? Why, what could have happened? Speak up.
Well, it is only that I heard His Highness talking to the Baroness Fitzsera early this morning in their room. She was weeping.
Oh, a lover's quarrel, no doubt. They have been frequent of late since both his wife and his father, the Emperor, have been...
Yes.
What was that?
This way, my lord. It seemed to come from the bedchamber of His Highness. There is Count Hoyas. Perhaps he...
Hoyas, did you hear that?
Yes, I thought.
Your Highness. Your Highness. It's locked. Here, Leibert. Help me break open the door.
Oh, yes, sir.
Dead. Both dead.
Shot, both of them. There is nothing that we can do.
There is one thing that we must do. We are the only three men in the world who know what is here inside this room. We must pledge ourselves here and now that no word of this shall ever pass our lips, save to the Emperor Franz Joseph. Do you swear it, Hoyas?
Of course.
And you, Leibert. This morning you were only a guard in the Imperial Army. But now on your silence may depend the fate of our empire.
I swear.
Leibert, you must stand guard. No one must see what we've seen in this room. Close that door and bar it.
What terrible secret of the Habsburgs was hidden behind that door? Had Rudolph's mistress killed him? Then herself? Had an angry uncle of the Baroness killed them both? What happened? Only three men beside the Emperor know the truth. Prince Philip of Coburg, Count Hoyos, and humble Lieutenant Leibert. The passing years take their heavy toll of the ill-starred House of Habsburg. Then, one morning in 1916, Leibert is summoned to the chamber of the Emperor.
It's Lawrence Leibert, Your Majesty, of Your Majesty's service.
Leibert, I sent for you. Come closer. Stand here beside my bed where I can see you. Yes, your face has scarcely changed since I last saw it on that morning nearly 30 years ago when you came to tell me of my son. Had Rudolph lived, and yet my family is old. Too old, like the Emperor.
Oh, Your Majesty.
There is only one thing left that I can save. The honor of my house. Coburg is gone. Hoyos is gone. And now I... You will be the last man to know of the shame of my son's death. Will you swear to me that you have never spoken of what you saw in that room in Meierling?
Indeed, Your Majesty, I have never.
Then swear to me that you will never breathe of it, not even to your own son, not even when you lie dying as I am now. Swear to me.
I swear it, Your Majesty.
That is enough. You may leave us. Now, Leibert.
Death brings peace at last to Franz Joseph. Time passes. The mighty empire of Austria-Hungary is shattered, and the proud House of Habsburg wanders in bitter exile over Europe. But still, through the sad post-war years, humble Police Commissioner Leibert faithfully keeps the promise to his emperor. And today, to a remote little cemetery in Vienna, is carried the body of Lawrence Leibert. And with it is buried forever the secret of Meierling.
Time marches on. Washington, November 16th, 1933. Maxim Litvinov to President Roosevelt.
As Foreign Commissar of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, I have the honor to inform you, Mr. President, that with the establishment of diplomatic relations between my government and the United States, it will be our fixed policy to restrain all organizations under direct or indirect control of the Soviet government from any agitation or propaganda to bring about by force any change in the political or social order of the United States.
Moscow, August 1935. Dictator Stalin's spokesman to the 7th All-World Congress of the Communist International.
Hereafter, communists are to lay aside the violent, blatant, red methods of the past. From now on, mask your anti-religion and spread communist doctrines and world revolution in the guise of socialism, liberalism, or new deals among the peoples of all lands.
The world revolutionists hear Earl Browder, U.S. communist leader.
I propose that a workers' farmers' party be formed in the United States under the leadership of Soviet Russia to seize the majority of elective posts in local, state, and federal government. This done, we will form our own communist national government, a government to protect American people from reaction, hunger, and war.
Sam Darcy, organizer of the bloody dock strike in San Francisco, is speaking.
When the contract of dock workers in the United States expires on September 20th, I expect to foment new U.S. strikes of unprecedented magnitude.
Closing the meeting, Georgi Dimitrov, once imprisoned and accused by the Nazis of burning the German Reichstag, advises...
It is our intention to support President Roosevelt in the coming election so that he may continue to lead the United States toward fascism, dissatisfaction, and warm sympathy for the aims of Russia. One word of caution. Remember, exert your efforts with cunning.
As the Communist International Congress closes in Moscow, every word spoken there is cabled to Washington. And today the world learns the text of a solemn note delivered by U.S. Ambassador Bullitt to the Soviet government.
On behalf of the government of the United States, I have the honor to lodge a most emphatic protest against this flagrant violation of the pledge given by the Soviet government on November 16th, 1933. If the Soviet continues to violate the solemn promise made by Commissar Litvinov to the President of the United States, friendly relations between the Russian and American peoples will no longer be possible.
Thus, in the strongest note of protest in her post-war diplomatic history, the government demands a showdown on communist agitation in the U.S. The United States and the world await Russia's answer. Time marches on. You have just listened to The March of Time, the reenactment of memorable scenes from the world's news prepared and presented by the editors of Time. Sponsored alternately by Remington Rand, manufacturers of typewriters and office equipment, and Time, publishers of the weekly news magazine, producers of The March of Time on the screen, The March of Time will come to you every night from Monday through Friday. So again tomorrow night at this time, and throughout each week, The March of Time will take you to the world's news fronts, to the sides of the great and the humble, into the midst of events significant and strange, thrilling and tragic, in the pace of time's inexorable march. Time marches on. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. WABC, New York.